Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
And this is Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And we're ready to talk about some high school and college football. And this is Georgia-Auburn weekend, so you know we're going to get around to that. Here's
Absolutely.
An Auburn man. I'm a Georgia man. So maybe we'll have a friendly wager. Just, we don't know. We'll see how it goes and everything. But, you know, there's some bad news this week. We heard North Oconee's star player got an injury and is out for the year. That is so sad.
Yeah, we're on location.
That's right.
Way,
we're
at North Oconee High School.
On the today. Campus of North Oconee today.
Kamari Brooks.
Yeah.
And he's a great player, and you hate it for him. Thankfully, he's going to get to play at the next level. It's not the end of the road for him. Tough for his team, but, I mean, they're so good.
Oh, yeah. Last week they won, and they didn't even play their quarterback. They rested him. And they beat Madison County like 38-3 or something like that. So a big win there. I was just in their gym. That's why we're out here at North Oconee. It's the region volleyball tournament. And their volleyball team here at North Oconee is outstanding. And they're the number one seed. And they're playing right now, I think, against Flowery Branch. And my daughter's coaching the Madison County team that's playing right now against East Forsyth. And East Forsyth had an edge as we came out here. But that's why we're on campus. But Kamari's injury is it's an unusual one, a hip injury. You don't hear that often.
A lot of young kids having hip injuries.
Yeah. So, but he's out for the year. I understand he will not have to have surgery or anything. They'll just maybe sound like broken ribs. You just let him rest or whatever. And he's going to miss the basketball season, too. And they were state champions in basketball last year. Boy, they got a lot of banners in there right now. They had baseball teams that won back-to-back state championships. They've got girls soccer who's won a state championship. They had unnumbers of tennis and golf championships. A real great tradition here at North Oconee High School and everything. And it looks like the way their football team's playing this year, they're going to follow up and have a good chance to get another championship, even without Kamari playing.
They will. I think they will. They got a... It's a great culture out here. These kids, they start them young, mm-hmm. and they by the time they get up to the high school, these guys know what they're doing, and they got the numbers that they can find the guys that can play, and they got it rolling.
Yeah. Well, I went to the Prince Avenue game, of course. They beat Stevens County last week 55-17. Very efficient game for the Wolverines. They scored their first 8 possessions and were never challenged. I tell you, one of the things that really impressed me was the legs I saw in that high school football game. The Stevens County kicker named Luke Waters, he kicked a 53-yard field goal, and he came close on a 52-yard field goal, and every kickoff he had, I believe, was in the end zone. And then the Prince Avenue kicker, Zachariah Duke, I think 8 out of 9 kickoffs went into and out of the end zone. And he had one that was returned to like the 16-yard line. And at the end of the game, the only punt he had was out of bounds at the 4 after a 49-yard effort. He's going to be kicking at the next level, I think, mostly as a kickoff and punter guy. And then the extra point man, Joey Black, he did a good job too. So it's, you know, they got all these kicking camps they sent them to now, and everybody knows how to coach them, and they practice. And
that's another example of them starting them early. And
yeah.
I mean, when you were in high school, did anybody ever kick a 50-yard field goal?
Oh, you know, my buddy Roger Harris, I graduated high school with him. He kicked a 47-yarder.
Really?
And as a senior. Now, he was the old straight-on kicking method. He was a guy who put up goalposts in his backyard to kick from, and just – they recruited him to be a kicker his senior year at Athens High School. And he had one game in which he did a field goal free kick, which is very rare.
Oh, yeah. That's
you know,
right.
If you call for a fair catch,
yeah, that's right, yeah.
You have the opportunity to line up and just kick a field goal without a rush. And Coach Wayman Sellers, who was the coach of the Athens High team, they had scored a touchdown, a safety, and a regular field goal. And he said, we've scored every other way. Let's see if we can score with a free kick. And he called it, and Roger made the kick.
Wow.
And so it was kind of odd that he did that.
A 47-yarder 47. Back then was unbelievable.
Yeah, and then he kicked for the freshman team. That was when they had freshman football. And kicked for the freshman team at Georgia. Now, he didn't go anywhere beyond that and everything. But he used to enjoy telling me stories about those freshman football players and going to class with them and things like that. So, Roger, I saw him just last week. He is still working as an accountant. He went into business with Steve Ginn, another good friend of mine. Steve may have retired, but Roger is still at it, and he says he's going to keep going. And good for him. If he's enjoying it, that's great. So, but yeah, kicking is a whole lot different game now. Of course, the soccer style came on so many years ago.
Soccer changed that. Just the sport of soccer. Sure. The kids playing. Yeah.
I mean, we didn't play that when I was a kid. Yeah. Did you play soccer?
Heck no.
I had it for 2 weeks in PE, and that was about it. And then my son wound up, he played a good bit. And he even played at the college level some.
I didn't know the rules. I had a buddy one time, we were watching a soccer game, just scrolling on the TV, and he said, why don't somebody just put the goalie in a headlock? So I think that might be against the rule.
You know, I've got a potential rule change for soccer, and this is a good avenue to talk about it. I've always hated deciding the game on penalty kicks.
Yep.
It's like at the end of a basketball game, well, let's just trade free throws. Now, I love what baseball did last year in the All-Star game with the home run derby at the end. But I wouldn't want to do that in a real game.
Yeah.
So here's what my rule proposal is. If you get to the end of your overtime and you're still tied in soccer, let's make one rule change. Nobody can use their hands, including the goalie.
Wow, that's
and then it still becomes a team game. The other aspects of the game remain the same, but it would be seen to me a more fair way to decide.
That's probably not a bad.
So it's out there in the Ethernet now. Let's see if it goes anywhere. If it does, we can say it started right here on sidelines and headlines.
Sidelines. You know, that's one of the raps against soccer, you know, the sport, you know, not enough involvement of the hands, you know. Hand-eye coordination is a big deal in most of the other sports.
Well, you know, here's another thing that, and again, soccer's a great game, and all my children played it, and I learned a lot about it. But if you watch one soccer game, they're pretty much the same as the other soccer games. There's not like a lot of intricate strategy that you can introduce into the game. You try to get the ball to the outside, bring it down, get it in the middle, kick it to the end of the goal, and just be faster and better than the other team. That's the advantage of football. Football, you have strategy.
It's more strategy, yeah.
You play different defenses. You play different offenses. You play man. You play zone. You line up in the wishbone. You line up in the spread. It's a lot more interesting game strategy-wise, and I think that's one of its appeals.
I think so, too. It keeps the kids in shape. You got a little kid that's hyperactive. Soccer's a good.
It is.
They run them to death.
Oh, yeah. That's one thing baseball's got going against it, is that a lot of standing around, particularly at the young age, they don't master the skills well enough to get the hitting and stuff going.
Yeah.
I've seen now, of course, the Savannah Bananas have reinvented baseball to some extent, and I think that's great. And there's another group now, they play some kind of black light baseball. Have you seen that
one? I've seen it. I heard about it, but I hadn't really.
So, and I think that's great that people want to watch that kind of stuff.
Well, before we move on from high school, Athens Academy had a big win against Banks County. Clark Central lost to Habersham Central. They got Loganville this week, who hadn't won a game, so hopefully Clark Central can get a victory.
That was Hab Central's first win over Clark Central since 2007. None of the players alive even remember, were even alive the last time that Habersham Central beat Clark Central. And that was a team that sent, Habersham Central team that sent four or five players to D1 football, including T. King, Tavares King, who played at Georgia.
That's right.
Receiver.
I remember him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oconee County beat East Hall. They are West Hall this week. And Jefferson's still rolling. They got the one loss to North Oconee.
Did you see they found a freshman running back that got over 200 yards rushing? So they must have found something.
We need to check and see what the guy from West Lawrence did last week. You know, the guy that got
600 yards.
Yeah, if he don't rush for 2,000, I'm going to be disappointed in him.
And now, did you see the Kel Blessed Trinity score? 3-0.
I didn't see that.
Kale kicked a field goal in the fourth quarter with about 3.5 minutes to win the game. 3-0.
That's crazy.
And it's an unusual score, But it usually happens about once or twice a year that somebody wins by a 3-0 score.
Hart County, who beat Prince last week, they lost to somebody.
Oh, lost to Hebron. Hebron Christian.
That's right. That's
Hebron
right.
is, they're the beast of that region. And it's going to come down to Prince and region and Hebron. Who's going to win that region? That's the last game of the year. And, of course, Hebron is unbeaten in the region. But if Prince wins that game, they'll have the head-to-head and they'll be the region champion and get the positioning, seeding into the playoffs over Hebron. So it's going to come down to that last game. But Hebron's looking like they're a really, really great team right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I know we'll probably talk about it on future episodes, but I saw where the GHSA voted to change the playoff format.
Yeah, and I don't really understand.
That's what I was about to say. I'm not sure I know. I could discuss it intelligently at this point anyway, but...
And it's going to be in all sports,
yep.
as I understand. It's a point system, and they already use that in the private school, A through AAA private school. And it's the one that's currently in place is your winning percentage multiplied times your opponent's winning percentage multiplied times their opponent's winning percentage is cumulative. So it's supposedly to account for strength of schedule, all that kind of stuff. The guy who does the Maxwell computer, who keeps track of high school football, he's proposed a slightly different method. Now, I don't know which one they chose. And again, I don't know. And I don't think it even matters if you win the region, per se.
Well, that's what I was about to say. That's the example it gave. You know, if the three best teams in the state are in one region, that allows them to... none of them to get eliminated to be able to go forward in the playoffs. And if you got a team that's not very good that might finish second in the region, they might get eliminated.
See, I've got mixed emotions about that. I mean, I like the games on the field to determine who goes where. And if three of the best teams happen to be in the same region, well, so what? You had your chance.
Yep.
So what if you're not one of the three best teams that's the last four standing? You had your chance.
Yep.
So
I agree with you. I got mixed feelings about it. And it's a general statement, but I think the GHSA kind of outsmarts themselves sometimes. My good friend, Penny Pitts Mitchell, who's the daughter of Coach Dan Pitts from down in my hometown, she has worked for the GHSA for years, so I got to be careful. My critic, she'll whip me if I criticize the GHSA. But sometimes I wonder about them.
Well, I remember I used to cover the state track and field meet when it was up at Jefferson every year, the state Olympics, they called it. And I used to always lobby for them to have the mile run. They had the 1,600-meter run. What's a good time in the 1,600-meter run? Nobody knows it because he don't run that anywhere. Even at the big levels, they run the 1,500.
Yep.
The mile has magic to it.
It does.
That is a magical race. And it would only entail drawing one line on the track to start from. That's it. And you could just run around the track. You wouldn't have to relane it or remeasure it. One line, and you could run the mile run. And I think that would be so much additional. But
you're right. Kids these days, since everything went to me, they don't understand you and I coming up. It was what's the mile? The 4-minute mile, all the stuff about the mile run.
Well, of course, when you and I were coming up, it was a 100-yard dash as opposed to a 100-meter dash.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Which I don't mind the 100-meter. That's fine. It's just an extra 10 yards or so. And I understand the 100 meters and the 200 and the 400. I don't understand the 1,600. So, but I'm not the one making the decision, so... I'm just one of those grumpy old men.
Grumpy old men. Grumpy old Athens High School graduates.
Oh, me. Well, it's going to be an off week for Prince Avenue this week, so I don't know if I'm going to a high school game. Maybe I'll try to catch somebody different and get a look at them and see.
I need to go. This may be a Friday night when I can go, but I'm planning to go to Auburn Saturday.
Oh, are you?
So,
all right, let's hold off on that when we come back, okay?
All right.
Hey, folks, we want you to subscribe and tell your friends about us. Send us some emails at sidelinesheadlines@gmail.com. That's sidelinesheadlines, no anything in between, @gmail.com, and give us some feedback. And subscribe and like us and tell your friends about us. We'll be back with more here.
Share us.
Yeah, on Sidelines and Headlines. Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
We're back with Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And as we said, it's the big Georgia-Auburn weekend, the Deep South's oldest rivalry. Can you remember the first Georgia-Auburn game you went to, Jim?
I can. I got a great story. You probably got some better stories than I do. I know you were kind of in the business of covering it. In fall of 1983, Georgia, I became an Auburn fan. My aunt married a guy that was a big Auburn booster, and he started sending me to the Pat Dye football camp during the summer. Neither one of my parents went to college, so I became an Auburn fan. In 83, you know, Georgia had Herschel for 3 years, won the SEC. Auburn had a great team in 83. I was, my friend Ron Douther, he's still my best friend in Macon. His daddy took them to the game in 83 in Athens. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that game. Auburn won.
Well, Auburn won the game.
It was a six-point victory. Auburn really pushed them around
the
field. But
didn't Bo have a big, long screen pass or something like Bo Jackson?
He did. He had a great game. Little Lionel James, who passed away a few years ago, a little train, scored a touchdown that game. Auburn kept driving it. They were just killing Georgia and couldn't miss a couple field goals, had drive stall. But they ended up winning the game. I didn't get to go. I watched it on TV, and I just wanted to be there so bad. But starting the next year, 1984, till today, I've only missed three Georgia Auburn.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
And one of them was the COVID year, and two of them were my son was involved in youth football on that Saturday. But that's my favorite. Well, it hadn't been my favorite recently because Georgia's kind of worked up on it. What's your favorite Georgia Auburn memory?
Well, gosh, going back, I remember going down in when Terry Bowden was there and Georgia tied him to interrupt his unbeaten streak. And I was not covering at that time, but I had driven the sports writers down there, and I'd gotten an extra pass for my son, and we were on the sidelines. We were right there on the goal line when Auburn was trying to score late, and the ball was knocked loose, and there was all this scurrying around and everything, and Ray Goff was shouting, "Stay down, stay down," all this kind of stuff, and it ended in a tie. So that's one thing I remember. I remember the 80 game, Herschel's freshman year, where he didn't have a particularly great game at Auburn, but I remember that Georgia scored on the last play of the half. There was a plate right near the goal line for Georgia, and the clock was running, no timeouts, and Buck Blue alertly yelled out, "Clock play, clock play." So they had a play that everybody practiced, and he threw a touchdown on that play.
I remember.
And Auburn, I think, got called for personal foul, unsportsmanlike on the play, and so Georgia got to kick off the next second half 15 yards up, and they did an onside kick and recovered it.
I remember that. You know, that game was not on TV.
Yeah, that's right.
but I've seen the highlights, and Auburn wore orange jerseys that day.
I forgot the orange jersey part and everything. Then I remember, of course, I remember the black jersey game when Georgia wore those against Tuberville, and that was 2007, I think.
It was.
First year that they had worn black jerseys, and I remember in the fourth quarter, Auburn was ahead. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this is going to be such a downer. But Georgia came back and won the game.
Well, it's been rough to be an Auburn fan in the rivalry the last few years.
I wanted to ask you this. Auburn has always had to deal with the big beast, Alabama, just right across the state there. And yet you won your share of national championships as well as anybody except Alabama. How has it been to deal with always having to face both Georgia and Alabama every year?
Well, the last 10, 15 years, if you think about it, it's been one of the only times going way back when Georgia and Alabama had both been really consistently good, and Auburn had to face both of them.
Yeah.
You know, people forget this. Coach Dooley had a losing record against Auburn. But through the Dooley years, most people probably would have said Georgia had a better program than Auburn, but Auburn had to play Alabama every year, and Georgia didn't.
And Georgia always pointed to the fact that the week before they played Auburn, they had to go down and play in Jacksonville at Florida, and they got beat up or exhausted and had to come back the next week, and it was always a tough thing to come back from.
Well, I'm a proud Georgian, but I always felt like the reason the Georgia-Auburn rivalry was so fun to me, you know, when Auburn sort of had the upper hand or was at least playing tit for tat, I always felt like Georgia had the potential to be better than Auburn. Mm-hmm. And it almost felt like in that rivalry, Auburn was being the overachiever and Georgia was being an underachiever a little bit. You know, so many times when, you know, I just felt like Georgia, to me, Georgia winning two national championships in a row, to me,
all right, Jim. There you go. You got it.
Winning two national championships in a row is less surprising than the fact they went 41 years without winning one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just always thought, you know, it was just kind of fun. Auburn could always kind of knock them out a little bit, knock them off their high horse. They'd go down and beat Florida, and then mm-hmm. Auburn would beat them or whatever. But the last, you know, Auburn's really dominated. Georgia's really dominated the head-to-head for about the last 20 years. But really, up until about 10 years ago, even though Georgia had the best of them head-to-head, Auburn won the national championship in 2010, went back and played for it 2 years later.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Georgia was still, they could never get there, but yet they were.
And you went back and played for it with a guy who used to be on the Georgia program, playing quarterback for it.
Defensive back, quarterback. Yeah. Just a couple, and even though Georgia was winning head-to-head, Auburn really, you know, I think the programs were sort of equal. Now, Kirby's, you know, Auburn's been through some rough years the last few years, and Kirby's done what he's done at Georgia. But, again, I hate to admit it, as an Auburn fan, Georgia probably ought to beat Auburn more than Auburn beats Georgia. I mean, Auburn's kind of plays second fiddle in their own state. Mm-hmm. Georgia is a...
Well, Auburn is kind of like Georgia Tech to Georgia, to Alabama, and it's all sure, that has been a tough... was always a tough finish for Auburn to play Georgia and Alabama as their last two games. And, of course, I think that's one reason the game was moved. Auburn really said, can we just not play those two games, the last two games? Yeah. What'd they get, though? LSU instead?
That's right.
Tennessee. Yeah. Gee, thanks. Well, your consolation prize is you get to play LSU instead of Georgia.
Well, these – we joke about you and I being old, but people, you know, these young fans don't know how interesting it was – you know, Coach Dooley was in Auburn.
Yeah.
Irk Russell was in Auburn.
Yeah, he played four-sport Letterman.
Yeah, the last four-sport Letterman at Auburn ever. And of course, Coach Dye was a Georgia guy. And then, you know, Shug Jordan coached at Georgia and then went back to Auburn. You know, he was an Auburn guy, and you had so many.
Well, and Joel Eaves, who was the athletic director that really got the program built at Georgia, came from Auburn. So many connections between the programs, you know, back and forth. So they've always been joined at the hip in a lot of ways. And, of course, they played back in 1892. That's when they first played. The game was over at Piedmont Park in Atlanta. And this is another thing that most modern people don't know. For so many years, the game was played in Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah.
It was, I think, until 1958, if I'm not mistaken. And 59, they played in Athens for the first time, and Georgia won that game and won the conference championship. That was the Fran Tarkenton to Bill Herron. The legend is he drew the play in the huddle on the ground and threw it for the touchdown, and they won.
Well, that's exactly right. Coach Pat Dye told me he played in the last one in Columbus and the first one in Athens.
That's right. He was an All-American lineman on that 1959 and 60 team.
Yeah, he and Tarkenton were teammates.
Yeah.
Both captains, I think.
He was one of the lay coaches that came down to the Athens YMCA when I was a little boy. You know, some of these guys would get hired to be the coach, the kids. And I think Pat was one of those coaches. Now, I never did really get to know him or anything like that. Although, the year that I was an Associated Press voter in the top 25 poll, Pat Dye called me personally to lobby to vote for one of his players to be all-conference, one of the linemen. And he made a personal call to me.
That's pretty cool.
It was. And, hey, you mentioned Shug Jordan. When I was just a fledgling reporter, I mean, I had just gotten started. Somehow I got him on the phone for an interview, and he must have given me 30 minutes of time.
Really?
He just answered all my questions. So nice. Man, what a great gentleman he was and everything. And I always had a lot of respect for him.
Well, I've told you the story. I made a kind of, a feeble attempt to play football at Auburn. In the fall of 1986, you know, the end of 1986, the Georgia game, that's when they
hosed them. Yeah.
And
I wasn't there for that one.
Yeah, I walked on. I tell my son, I walked on and I walked off. But that was my freshman year in college. And I transferred to Presbyterian College, by the way. They're undefeated. They play Butler. They're still undefeated this week. But anyway.
No blue hose.
The blue hose. But the 1980, yeah, that was 86. Yeah, fall of 86, uh-huh. Was it? That was the year after Bo Jackson won the Heisman Trophy.
So you never got to be a teammate with Bo?
No, I never got to. I got ran over by a lot of good players, but never got.
Did you ever meet Bo?
I did. I met him briefly. Bo's not necessarily the most friendly guy.
I don't know anything about him.
He's a good guy. I think he's done a lot of good things for Auburn and other people, but he's just kind of an ornery person.
You know, I tried to look up, and I don't think that he and Herschel were on the field together but one time. That was 82. And I looked up, and Herschel had 177 yards rushing in that game. I could not find Bo's statistics for that particular game. He had like 800 yards rushing as a freshman, which is that's not too shabby. If you take a poll, you're going to get different opinions of which one was the best. But I don't think anybody will tell you they're ever any better than those two backs in the SEC.
They were incredible. Georgia, you're right. 82 would have been the only year they played head-to-head.
Yeah.
And people, Georgia's ranked number one. Auburn came within an
eyelash. Oh, it was. That was Munson was saying, look at the sugar falling from
That's
the
right.
sky. Or something. They broke it up. And somebody threw something on me, I think.
That's right. Talking about the hose game, water hose game. That was fall of 86. In the spring of 1987, when still in my freshman year at Auburn, Louis Grizzard came over and did a little speech, his little routine for the students. And it was really a lot of the kids didn't know who Louis Grizzard was. A lot of older people from the community came. But me and my roommate went, and Grizzard walked out there, and first thing he said, it's a lot drier than it was last time I was here. And then he said, you know, we've made a lot of sociological progress in the South in the last few years. He said, I watched a black man turn a water cannon on 5,000 white people.
Oh, wow.
But
only Grizzard could get away with that.
It's probably politically correct now, but it got a big laugh.
I bet it did. Well, but, you know, I also remember the 96 game. That was the 4 overtime game. And it's famous also because of the photo of Uga attacking the Auburn football player in the end zone, taken by a Montgomery advertiser photographer.
Excuse me, gentlemen. That's all right. I'm just passing through. Yeah.
Well, here we are in the lower 40.
You can't beat that. You can't get that in any other podcast.
That's right. This is live podcast, buddy. That was the game that went to 4 overtimes. And the interesting thing about that game is in the overtime period, Robert Edwards, the Georgia running back, had really not played much in the game. And so when the overtimes came, he had fresh legs.
Oh, yeah.
And Georgia just kept handing the ball to him, and he kept going and going. And I think there were like 2 plays in the whole overtime period that he did not touch the football. I remember talking with Mike Bobo, who was the quarterback of that game, and I thought he might say that was one of his best games ever, but he actually talked about the Georgia Tech win over Georgia Tech as being one of his best games ever. But that was quite a game that night.
Well, what would have been, I'm sure, your favorite Georgia-Auburn game if Georgia had won, which we talked about the other day, it was in 71 when everybody says Pat Sullivan came to Athens, and your buddy Andy Johnson. Was Georgia's quarterback.
Yeah, year. That's right. That was a great game, and Georgia thought they were going to tie the game, and Kim Braswell, the kicker, who was mostly deaf, could hardly hear, missed the extra point, and it was 21-20. And just that one little missed extra point kind of let a little bit of the air out. And on the next play, Sullivan and Beasley connected for like 70-something yards, and then it was, after that, they pull away 35-20 win. And that was the only game that team lost that year, the 71 team. That was a great Georgia football team.
Well, that's what, that was my point. I mean, as an Auburn fan, that was a little bit, you know.
Well, that was the year, though. Auburn was unbeaten right then, too.
Yeah.
Alabama was unbeaten. Georgia was unbeaten. Nebraska was unbeaten. Oklahoma was unbeaten. I mean, Georgia was unbeaten with two games to go in the season, was ranked number 7 in the country because there were so many other unbeaten teams in front of them. It was an incredible season. Well, Southern Cal, I think, was unbeaten.
You know, Andy was a great player. Obviously, Pat Sullivan. It's a shame both those guys aren't with us anymore. So it's just,
you know, they became good friends later in life. They really did. They had a chance to just connect over the years, and they really became great friends. You know, both of those guys, what ambassadors for the sport of football and for their schools and everything.
Well, when I made my attempt to play football at Auburn, you know, of course, I mean, Pat Sullivan was offensive coordinator. He and Larry Blakeney, who went to Troy, had a great career. Blakeney was an Auburn guy. Were the offensive coordinators. Of course, they wouldn't talk a little freshman like me. But I just remember being around and listening to Pat Sullivan talk, and you could tell what a great guy he was and what a great rapport he had with the kids as a coach. He had a very successful coaching career, even though he never, I don't think, got in the right spot as a head coach.
He was at TCU as a head coach, is that right? I don't remember where else he was.
He was, wasn't he at Samford?
Could have been. Both of them died of cancer, I believe. Yeah. So that was tragic and everything. Well, some other games that I remember from the Georgia-Auburn series. Let me think here. We talked about the black shirt. Oh, I remember the year that Tuberville came to Athens, and they ran the ball down the field late, and Georgia tackled him on like the 5-yard line, and then Auburn just wasted time, finally kicked a field goal and won the game. And that was a tough loss for Georgia.
The game you're talking about, that was 2005, I'm pretty sure, when Georgia actually won the SEC with DJ Shockley.
Yeah. And then the next year, Trey Battle, yeah, went over to Auburn and intercepted 3 passes.
From my hometown, Trey Battle.
Really?
Married Persons
Hospital. I interviewed him one time, and that was the game he remembered as the greatest game he ever played. Three interceptions against Auburn. I guess Stafford was the quarterback for Georgia in that game.
He was.
And everything. So, you know, there's been a lot of course. This goes back to before me, go back to the 42 game. That was one that broke Georgia's hearts when Auburn upset an undefeated Georgia team and ruined their – didn't ruin their season, but it you know, put a damper on it. They did go on to the Rose Bowl and win over there, but that was a tough loss. Yeah, these teams have done that to each other over the years. You mentioned the Hose game. The other game thing I remember about that is, you remember who the quarterback that night was for Georgia? Was Wayne Johnson.
That's right.
Because James Jackson had to go disappeared.
And he had to go to a funeral or something?
Somebody died, and they couldn't find him. Ray Goff said that somebody said, go find our quarterback. And they couldn't find him. And found out there was somebody death in the family, and he just never did let anybody know. And Wayne Johnson started the game, and Georgia won.
Pete, you know, Auburn, was it like a 3-touchdown favorite that night?
Could have been.
They were. I was reading about it recently, and they were really good. They lost to Florida. They beat Alabama. I mean, they ended up losing 10 games, won 10 games, lost 2, won the bowl. But that was a very good – and that started 86, which was the year I was over there. They won – the next 4 years, they won 3 out of the 4 those years. They were SEC champs. Or, you know, back then you could be co-champs.
Right.
And they beat Alabama 4 years in a row. So, again, I tell people, it's safe to say I was in over my head trying to play with those. I mean, they had some guys that were really good.
I bet they did.
They were really good.
But. Yeah. Well, and so we talked about this a little bit. Auburn's their 3 permanent opponents are Alabama, Georgia, and it was the third one,
Vanderbilt.
And I was kind of surprised they didn't include Mississippi State because they've played them a lot over the years. It's the other team they played, and they're so close geographically. It's not less than 100 miles, I think. So hopefully
Diego Pavio will move on and Vandy will become an easier victory.
Well, one last thing on the Georgia-Auburn series. This year's Auburn team, it's not like they played terrible, but they just can't win for one reason or another. You've watched them more than I have, the A&M games and the Oklahoma games. Do you have an explanation?
I don't. I mean, just I hope as an Auburn fan. I mean, I like the tone when I heard Freeze talk this week. I think he's finally realized, hey, we got to circle the wagons and we got to figure out how to win. You know, because they've had that problem for 3 years.
Yeah,
you know, having winnable games that they've lost.
Yeah, they could have easily beaten both A&M and Oklahoma and come into this game unbeaten. They really could have.
If you believe the recruiting, you know, they got talent, you know, the portal, all that, they got talent on the team. The culture appears to be good. I mean, you hadn't had a bunch of kids saying, you know, we're unhappy, we're leaving, all that. But they've got to win. I think they got a chance against Georgia. If I had to bet money on it, I'd probably bet it on Georgia.
Well, they're a small favorite, 4.5-point favorite, I think, something like that.
But if Auburn can somehow win, I mean, Freeze and that program really needs it. Put it back to you. What do you think about Georgia?
Well, you know, I think we're far enough into the season that what you are now is what you are. There's not a whole lot of things that are going to develop. And the biggest disappointment I've had is the lack of a pass rush. They're just not able to get the pressure on the quarterback. I think they had 2 sacks against Kentucky. Had no sacks and hardly any pressure against Alabama. And, of course, early in the Tennessee game, they were not getting to Joey Aguilar. They may have gotten some pressure later in the game. And I'm just wondering, where is the pass rush? And if you don't get a pass rush this week against a team that gave up how many sacks against Oklahoma? 6 or 7?
Yeah. And
10. And how many? I don't know what they did against A&M. I've heard basically a lot of folks say that the quarterback's holding the ball too long is the biggest issue, because they thought they had a good offensive line. Everybody bragged about their receivers, but their passing game, their offense has just not gotten off the snide for one reason or another. But the Georgia pass rush is kind of been the thing that's most concerning to me. I've liked what I've seen of the offensive line the last couple of weeks. I think they've made some strides, and we've got some running backs that are getting the job done, particularly Chauncey Bowens. I mean,
wow.
He looks like a bell cow right now.
Yeah, he's a good player.
He is. And Gunnar Stockton is using his feet more and becoming a bigger threat in that regard. And I think his passing has been effective. He's not a Carson Beck when it comes to passing, but there's not many that are. But he's effective. He's good enough. And he throws an accurate ball. And he's got a strong arm. So I think they'd be favored. I think that they are favored, but, you know.
Well, Auburn had the off week. It's over there. I mean, if Auburn comes out and lays an egg on offense this week, I'm going to start scratching my head. I just got to believe with the off week they'll come out and play good. And like you said about Georgia's defense, I mean, the Alabama game was close. But it just seemed like watching that game that Alabama just kind of almost had their way with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were 8 out of 8 on third downs like that.
And I'm not saying Auburn. I'm just saying hopefully Auburn watched that film and they can come out. Alabama was just very efficient, and Auburn has not been efficient.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope that, I hope the off week helps them. But
well, the one thing that Georgia has improved on since the Tennessee game is they've not given up as many of the big plays.
Yeah.
Now, Alabama had a touchdown that was dropped over the secondary early in that game, and that would have been a big play. But I think they've done a better job at just making teams have to earn what they get. But still a little bit concerned about that defense and everything.
Auburn hadn't had a turnover all year, can you believe it?
Really? Well, Georgia has not gotten a lot of turnovers this year. So that's
but it doesn't mean anything if you're not. Auburn's got to get yards on first down. These coaches nowadays are so impatient. You know, I mean, just run it up the middle. And, I mean, go back and watch the Georgia-Florida game in 1981 when Herschel had 54 touches. There were about 30 plays in that game when he gained nothing.
Yeah.
But they kept running it. and they wore them down. They won the game, you know. I think more teams ought to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, that's just Georgia. Auburn's not the only game this weekend.
I know.
Let's talk about some of those when we come back, okay?
All right.
We'll be back here on Sidelines and Headlines in a moment. Be sure to like us.
Share us.
See you in a minute. Hey, I'm Blake Giles.
I'm Jim Harden.
It's Sidelines.
And Headlines.
And as we say, it's a busy college football weekend. It always is. Last weekend, we had quite a stunner down in Gainesville, Florida, with Florida beating Texas. And as I said, we're far enough in the season, you are who you are. Maybe that's who Arch Manning is.
I agree. I mean, I got a text from my buddy. You know, at the end of that, he just said, Texas is a fraud, you know. And
here's the thing. Of course, Penn State lost to UCLA. And so the teams that were ranked
Speaking
one and
frauds.
Two, the teams that ranked one and two begin the season are now out of the top 25. Now, part of that, maybe the Texas part, some of that goes on to the media for buying some of the hype and forgetting that Texas graduated most of its offensive line, lost a bunch of skill players, got an inexperienced quarterback, and you expect them to come back and just reload. Well, that's not from us. That's a bad evaluation. Now, Penn State is a team that went to the semifinals last year, brought back a lot of their talent, almost beat Oregon, and then they lay an egg against UCLA, having to travel all the way out to the West Coast. Thank you, Big Ten, for expanding, so we have to play on the West Coast for a game in the regular season. And it was a devastating loss for them. They're really behind the eight ball now as far as into the college football playoffs.
Well, back to Texas. I mean, I know what you said is true. We talked last week about how the transfer portal was kind of leveled, made the playing field more level for certain people. But you look at Georgia. I mean, I think some people think Georgia's not as good, but I'm telling you, Georgia can play with anybody.
Yeah.
And I just don't think if you know, I don't think Georgia's going to lose to Florida. But Texas, I just think, my point is, I think Texas, there's just no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they got more money than everybody. They've got, you know, they'll tell you they've got the tradition and the whatever, supposedly a great, cool place to go to school. I mean, I don't get it.
And you know, to give Arch Manning credit, he has really been under pressure all season long. The offensive line has not given him the protection they need to. And, you know, when he has time, he's like most quarterbacks. He can throw it down the field and pick you apart, but he just hasn't had that opportunity yet. So he really was almost in a no-win situation coming in as an untested player and already hyped as the heir apparent, the Heisman Trophy winner. That just comes with being a Manning. You know, of course, I don't know the guy. I don't know how he's handling all this. I know it's got to be a tough time for him, and hopefully he'll grow through this. From all outward appearances, the Manning family looks like a strong, solid family, genuine people. I don't know if you've ever met any of them, and I don't know them at all either, but it sounds like that he's got the family support that he needs, and maybe he'll come through all this and everything.
But I think Arch Manning will be fine if he doesn't play like his daddy. His daddy was the Manning that didn't play football, and I think he's done great. So,
well, now they got to play Oklahoma in the big game in Dallas this week, and I guess Oklahoma comes in on the high side of things because they're unbeaten, but their quarterback is hurt.
I heard today they're saying he might play.
Really?
Yeah. I had surgery on his passing hand 2 weeks ago or whatever.
Wow.
It would not surprise me at all if Texas beat them.
No, it wouldn't me either.
And I think
they've got a good, decent defense. Yeah. I don't have any problems about their defense per se, although they didn't play that well against Florida. But how does that help Billy Napier?
I was about to say we kind of skipped over Florida. You know, everybody's got a tough schedule. Florida's got a really tough schedule.
They,
Miami and Florida State out of conference, plus a gauntlet.
Oh, yeah. Who they got this week? A&M?
A&M.
Where?
Out there.
And A&M is an unbeaten team in the conference. You know who's got the best path, supposedly, to the SEC championship?
Missouri?
Ole Miss.
Ole Miss, yeah.
Ole Miss, unbeaten. Yes, they got to come to Athens, but the odds of the computers looking at the schedule and say, this is a team right now that's in the best position to win the conference championship. With a backup quarterback half the time.
I know. They announced today that game's at 3:30 in Athens, which Lane Kiffin's happy about that. He didn't want to play at night in Athens.
Yeah.
But the Billy Napier thing, how that – I mean, if they were to just, you know, upset Georgia or win one or two more of these games that everybody's already assumed they're going to lose.
They could beat Florida State.
Yeah.
They really could.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Florida State is a good team. I don't think they're a great team.
They're not.
So, it's – hey, there's no weak sisters in the SEC. No. There really isn't. I mean, it used to be Vanderbilt was an automatic win. Hey, you look at that game last week against Alabama. They went toe-to-toe with
them. They went toe-to-toe most of that game.
They sure did.
Speaking of Bama, they go to Missouri. That's
Who did Missouri have an off week, too?
I think they did.
And they're unbeaten in the conference. They've got a strong running game.
Wouldn't surprise me at all.
It would not. DeBoer has a sketchy record on the road. He came to Athens and won, though. So,
I heard somebody say today, back to Arch Manning, said if the kid at Alabama was instead of Ty Simpson, he was Ty Manning, he would be the front runner for the Heisman, which is probably true. That guy's good.
Well, I've heard a lot of good things about this kid up at Indiana. He's playing really well, too. Simpson is, I mean, he looks like he's gold. I mean, he does it. He has the one key thing going for a quarterback that I think is the best of all, and that's accuracy.
He
throws the ball on target.
Well, he's got a couple of guys, receivers, that are really, really good.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a good scheme. I mean, when they're doing what they want to do, and they're clicking. And it comes back to quarterback. I mean, look what DeBoer did when he had Michael Penix, you know. And they can, it's like Georgia, they can beat anybody, Alabama on the right day.
Yeah. So you got Bama's playing at Missouri. Alabama is at?
Alabama's at Missouri. Florida's at Texas A&M.
Oklahoma and Texas are in Dallas. And then Arkansas against Tennessee.
Your favorite
Did
coach.
Tennessee play last week? I can't remember.
I think they did. Did they play? Was last week when they beat Mississippi State, or was that the week before?
It was last week they beat Mississippi State, yeah.
Your favorite coach is now at Arkansas.
My favorite coach. You know, I sent you that little article that somebody had done, and we were talking about that. Somebody said that he went to Arkansas several years after he got run out of town, basically, and apologized. And those folks were ready to forgive him for that. But it's not like that's his only black mark. He's run out on a lot of programs, the Falcons, Louisville. He's got a sketchy record in a lot of ways. And frankly, I would just be embarrassed to hire him as a head coach. But I noticed the athletic director said he will be considered. Maybe he's just placating the boosters by saying that. I don't know.
Arkansas is a tough place, I think. I mean, you know, there were times.
Don't they have Walmart money behind them over there?
Walmart, Tyson Chicken.
Yeah.
There were times in history when they were as good as any.
He was the Bear Bryant of Arkansas football. Yeah. Vince Dooley had the greatest respect for Frank Broyles.
Oh, yeah.
He told me that his career would have been incomplete if he had never beaten Arkansas and Frank Broyles. And he did finally beat him. John Casey kicked the field goal at the end of a bowl game to beat Arkansas, and that was a big win for him.
Coach Dooley and Frank Broyles kind of reminded, if you look at some of the old clips of Frank Broyles talking when he was a coach, he kind of reminds you of Coach Dooley. But, we're getting old again. These young kids don't know who Frank Broyles
is. Look it up. You know, I made a reference, and I actually wrote the story for the O'Connor Enterprise this week on the Prince Avenue game. And I use this quote at the beginning. See if you know where this quote comes from. I love it when a plan comes together.
Well, I've heard that a lot. Where did that originate?
That's from the A-Team.
Oh, yeah.
Hannibal Smith.
That's right.
He would say that. And I said, look it up, kids. It's a 1980s TV series.
Gosh, it took me a minute. You're exactly right. We should say that all the time. I love it when a plan comes together. My Frank Broyles memory, I know we'll go down the rabbit hole talking about all kind of crazy stuff, but I used to, when I think about he and Keith Jackson calling college football games together back in the, I guess, 70s, 80s.
Yeah,
they were a great duo.
Yeah, yeah. Did he do the Herschel game in 80 when, was that Broyles and Keith Jackson when Herschel ran against South Carolina? Was that, did they do that game? I can't remember.
Keith Jackson did, and it probably was. I'm sure it was Frank Broyles. Yeah. People remember, you know, or forget, the Georgia-Florida game, the TV was Al Michaels. And I can't remember in 80.
I don't know
his partner was. But
they were on back-to-back weeks. That was really unusual in that day.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was one of the rare Georgia-Florida games I did not go to. I watched that on television. And I'm watching that Lindsey Scott run down the field. We didn't have an idea that there was nobody in front of him. And so we were in suspense watching on television, whereas the people in the stadium, they knew right away, he's going to score a touchdown if he doesn't fall down. So
it's crazy. That's the one play. You know, Lindsey was a great player. But,
yeah.
You know, they didn't pass back then. But that was the one play where, maybe not the one, but one of the only where I remember Lindsey. That was just his speed on display. He took off and they couldn't catch him.
Well, and of course, the Florida safety man fell down. And that made a big difference in the play. I mean, it was going to be a complete pass anyway. And, of course, they were just trying to get down the field and get a field goal is what they were trying to do. But then to get a touchdown was just like gold. What a game that was and everything.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is Georgia-Auburn this weekend. Do you want to make a prediction?
Well, I'm going to be a homer. I'm going to say Auburn. I got to give you the score. I'm going to say Auburn wins 30-28.
Wow, a high scoring game for Auburn. I don't know if they can score that many points.
They got to. I mean, if they don't, it's just, I'm going to really be singing the blues if they come out and lay another egg.
Well, I'm going to say Georgia 30-20. How about that? That's just off the cuff. I think Georgia will win. And I certainly hope it's right. You know, for the longest time in this series, the road team had the advantage, would win the game.
It was uncanny.
It was every year it seemed like the road team would win. And so it's like it, but it's still, it's a tough place to play over there in Auburn. So it's not like there's not a home field advantage. There is. It just, for some reason, didn't play out too often that way.
Well, if anybody under the age of 40 out there watching our podcast, y'all just need to know there was a time when Auburn they had a few stretches of time where they sort of owned Georgia. So it's obviously that's on the other on the shoes on the
other side. Georgia's won to dominate the series for the last several years. You know, I guess Malzone had the win in 2017 in the regular season, and Georgia got the revenge in the SEC championship game. Has Auburn's won since then, though, haven't they?
Last time
I can't remember.
That's the last time
they won.
My son and I were talking about this week. He said, he was in school at Auburn then. We went to the Georgia game, then he went to the Iron Bowl, and Auburn beat Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama and Georgia, and then Alabama and Georgia played for the national title that year. He said, I was thinking the whole time when I was sitting there watching that Alabama game, he said, you know, we beat them, we're going to have to rematch with Georgia. He didn't want that. It's the worst nightmare game through is to play Georgia twice.
Well, I guess you could claim a little bit of a national championship yourself then, because whichever team won,
That's
you
right.
beat them both.
That's right. And Auburn, you know, we've been known to do that, claim those national championships.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, me. All right, well, it's always a fun weekend when Georgia and Auburn play. Are we leaving anything out college football-wise?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we are. I mentioned the Blue Hose. I think we hit. There's not a, you know, there's some good games, but it's just not top to bottom great games this week.
Well, he had to go out and check the cows on the upper 40 now.
Yeah, he's coming back. I felt a gnat or two. Are we in North Oconee or are we down in South Georgia?
I didn't know this was North Oconee A&M that we were at.
These gnats, bugs, and these farmers, we may be in Valdosta. Didn't know it.
Speaking of Valdosta, did you see where Colquitt County beat them?
I saw that.
And the Colquitt County running back who's coming to Georgia. He's not on the team anymore.
What happened there?
Jay Lamar. I don't know. He's just not on the team anymore. But Cockrell County won 18-17, I think. That was a big win for them. Valdosta, I think, weren't they unbeaten?
They were unbeaten.
Yeah. You know, it used to be state championship had to go through Region 1. Now it's Region 8 where all the big Gwinnett County schools are.
I saw the Georgia, I guess it's the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame this year. They started honoring teams, and they're honoring the 71 Valdosta team and the 76 Warner Robins teams, which was considered
national champions.
Two of the greatest teams ever. But, you know, again, that's been so long ago. The way these teams are now, those guys probably couldn't beat
who were the brothers that played on the 71 Valdosta team. Was it the Rome brothers or
Stan Rome? Yeah. Was the receiver. Stan Bounds was the quarterback.
Okay.
And you know, the Warner Robins team in 76, they had James Brooks, Ron Simmons, and Jimmy Womack.
Uh-huh.
They were really good.
Womack came to Georgia. Brooks went to Auburn. Where did Simmons go? Did he go to
Florida
Auburn?
State.
Florida State, yeah.
He's All-American at Florida
State. That's right.
He ended up being a professional wrestler.
Oh, man. What about that? Wrestling. You know, that's making a comeback. ESPN's got wrestling now. They have a wrestling deal. Do you watch wrestling?
No, I didn't even watch it when I was a kid. I just never got it. You know, but kids might, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, you know, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, Tommy Wildfire Rich, all that. I never got into it.
I didn't either. I used to watch Goldberg when he did it for a little bit. And he was the silent champion. He didn't do much talking when he was in the ring and everything. But I remember my daughter, she went down to the Georgia-Florida game one year with a friend of hers, and they got on the elevator, and there was Goldberg. They were all struck. Now, he's a big human being now.
Most of those guys are good athletes. You know, we can make fun of it for being fake and all that, but we probably wouldn't want to fight any of them.
Oh, no. You know, there's no question it's orchestrated. They admitted it in court. Yeah. You know, it's not like it's a big secret and everything. But you watch the things that they do in the ring, athleticism is involved in being able to pull off these stunts. Yeah. Hey, I think they're playing our swan song. You hear that in the background? The band's tuning up here at North Oconee. And so it may be a time for us to sign off and everything. Hey, we appreciate you guys watching and staying with us and subscribing and telling everybody about us. And we hope you're enjoying it and having a good time. And, hey, we'll see you next week, right?
Yeah, like us, share us, War Eagle.
All right, go Dawgs, right here, sidelines and headlines. See you next week.